This program is called Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. We are on Monday through Friday, 12 to 1. And on to today's show, a fellow who has become one of my most frequent guests, as it turns out. Jim Pugh is a professor of trombone in the Jazz Studies Division at the University of Illinois School of Music and a distinguished player all through the not only jazz spectrum but all kinds of other musical spectrums for many, many years. He's brought with him a fellow about whom you could say pretty much the same thing, Walter Blanton, trumpet player, cornetist, flugelhorn player, and composer, who currently teaches at the College of Southern Nevada in Las Vegas. And he's been in Las Vegas for quite a while. Walter Blanton is here at the University of Illinois for a week-long residency, or pretty close to a week. The first event of which is a composition forum tomorrow afternoon, and the first performance of which is tomorrow night in the Recital Hall, Smith Memorial Hall, and a couple of other performances as the week progresses as well. So thank you, gentlemen, both, for coming on the show today.
Thank you. It's our pleasure.
Welcome again, Jim. What is there about Walter Blanton that made you decide to bring him in for residency?
Well, it all sort of came about due to my association now with Sinfonia de Camera. And Ian Hobson, the conductor, had asked me about the possibility of doing a solo piece, and was there some piece I'd like to play? And there's a composition that Walt actually wrote for me that we did about 10 years ago at one of the International Trombone Association festivals that they have every year. And I never had a chance to play it again, and it seemed like a perfect time. It's four chamber orchestra, so it's not a huge, you know, you don't need huge forces like you do with some works, and Sinfonia was like the perfect size ensemble for it, so it seemed like a real good opportunity to play that. Then the idea, well, if we're going to do that, it'd be nice to have Walt actually here for it. Then how can we expand that? I found about there was the Roland Visiting Artist Fund that ended up providing like funds to be able to finance his visit here, and we expanded it into a performance of, like I said, tomorrow night of a jazz quintet piece that that he wrote also about 10 years ago for us, and then it was also to abuse his teaching skills and having him you know, speak to the composition students. So it sort of crossed boundaries within the school too, so he's going to actually be talking with the composition, like the classical, quote-unquote classical composition students. He'll be speaking like with my jazz composition class today. He'll be meeting with the classical brass department trumpet players. He'll be meeting with the jazz trumpet players. So it's really sort of a wonderful boundary crossing event. And also the fact that he's talking to composition students and instrumentalists, and being here to play some for them and for it to have his compositions played, it just seemed like a perfect, you know, perfect chance. Plus, we go back, we've been friends for many, many years, so it seemed like a great chance for us to get to spend some time together, too.
Do you remember when you met?
Yeah, I remember very well. It was, I forgot. No, it was in 1971 or two, which was?
Probably
it?
Two.
Yeah, 1972. And I had been teaching at the University of Kentucky, and I had decided at that time that I was too young for this kind of work.
The teaching part?
Yeah, well, I needed to get out there and play some music, and so I joined Woody Herman's band, and almost at the same time.
Yes, I think it was that. I think we got there each other. Yeah,
very, very close to the same time, so we became, you know, real close friends at that point. When you're on the road, you become really close friends or really close enemies. Because you're in a bus, you know?
So you either have to get along or figure out ways not to get along and still manage to be able to perform together.
You learn to get along, and you make such great friends when you're in that sort of a situation, and plus you're on a famous band playing great music every night, and it's a real bonding experience from the music itself, because we were there for a reason, you know, to play Woody Herman's music. So
how long were you in that band?
Well, for me it was about 2.5 years, something like that. My wife and I, it was very difficult to be married and be on the road. And so after that amount of time, we decided we were going to go someplace where we could be like regular people and maybe even buy a house and stuff like that, you know. And so we decided to go to Las Vegas because there was so much work there. So, but I always really felt like I wanted to stay on Woody Herman's band, at least at least as long as you did, Jim.
How long were you with him, Jim?
I was just a hair over 4 years.
Is there a typical tenure with, was there a typical tenure with that band at the time?
It sort of varied almost by instruments in a way. It's like most of the horn players would tend to stay a little bit longer. Rhythm section players tended to leave. Like if they stayed a year, that was a long time for a rhythm section player.
Is there a reason for that?
Well, probably because I think from a piano-based drum player's viewpoint, unless you're really hardcore into big band music, I think the desire to get out and play more like trio music or in a quartet or in a smaller group is larger than staying and playing like a support role, particularly for a pianist being more of a support role in a big band than being the primary soloist in a trio. So I think that had a lot to do with horn players. You're playing some solos, you know, if you're not in the sort of the star seats in the band, you're doing maybe a little bit of soloing, but you would also, if you're out working a Broadway show or doing recording sessions or whatever, you're also playing just parts and doing very little soloing too. So it's actually very similar. So it's along the lines of what you would be doing wherever you are. So I think, like I said, horn players, I stayed for 4 years. There were a few people on the band. I think the guy who now is taking over the leadership of the band when they go out to do things, a saxophone player by the name of Frank Tiberi, I think at the time Walt and I joined, he'd already been on the band for 11 years.
No kidding.
And he stayed on through the time, through when Woody passed away, and now he's become Woody. he's actually leading the band now. So it's, you know, there were people that made lifetime careers out of that, and people that it was a stepping stone or a finishing school for what they had learned prior to that.
And in this case, it was sort of, well, it wasn't exactly your launching pad, Walt, to Las Vegas, but it got you there anyway. Right?
My launching pad?
Yeah.
My launching pad.
Well, Woody's band served that little bit.
I think Woody's band was the launching pad for me.
Yeah, that's what I meant, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it was, definitely. Because it's one of those things that this launching pads have a tendency to be things you really wanted to do, and so that it pushes you out and gets you to do things that you'd never done before. And that was it for me. And I'd always loved the music of that band. So, it was a remarkable experience in that you meet a lot of people that you would have not met before. You run into other road bands that are really good bands, and also you can change bands, you know, like some people did. We didn't, but
I certainly read about plenty of people that hop around from all those different big bands back then. You said that there was so much going on in Las Vegas, musically speaking. I don't, obviously erroneously think of Las Vegas as a music town. I think of it for all other kinds of reasons. What was going on then and what's going on now that made you go there and then has kept you there for all this time?
Well, what made me go there was that there was an enormous amount of work. And at the time that I arrived in 1972, I think that there were 16 full orchestras, house orchestras, which is a lot. I mean, I'm talking full string sections and band and the whole rhythm section and the whole thing. And I think that to have 16 of those type ensembles backing up major stars, it was quite a, I mean, there was a lot of work. I mean, I started working immediately. Because there was an opening. There's one of the things that musicians in Las Vegas in those days did, but they would go to the musicians' hall, musicians' union hall, and we had a bar actually at that hall and a place to play music.
And they often would go together, right?
Yeah, you'd work. Well, the hours were late, so things started happening about 2 in the morning, and I was playing on what we would call a kicks band, a big band that somebody had a book, and they managed to call players to come in and play. And being, somebody who just came in off of Woody Herman's band, I got a lot of calls because of that. And so I was playing, I'd been there 2 weeks. I was playing at a kicks band at the Union Hall, probably was about 3 o'clock in the morning. And a guy came up to me and he said, you sound really good. And I said, thanks. Remember this fellow very, very well. He was the contractor for a particular hotel. And he said, do you want a job? And I said, but there was a waiting period that you had to wait out to get full-time work. You could play casuals, but you couldn't play full-time work. But they needed lead trumpet players, and I was mostly a lead trumpet player in those days. So I said, but don't I have to, wait out the waiting period? And he said, not in this case. Don't worry about it. And I said, well, when do you want me to start? And he said, tomorrow night. And that was after 2 years waiting. But that doesn't happen anymore. But it used to happen back then.
Because everybody observes the waiting period, or?
Yeah, well, you had to observe the waiting period. But if there was a need, like maybe all the lead trumpet players were working steady jobs already, and they needed to find somebody in a hurry. A very well-known lead trumpet player person walked off the gig, and and that's why this opening was there.
Well, why do you say it doesn't happen anymore now?
Pardon me?
Why do you say that doesn't happen anymore?
Because there's not much work.
Oh.
Yeah.
So the scene has changed quite
a bit.
There's
a lot of players. There's way more players for the amount of work than it's ever been.
Well, maybe we'll talk about how that transformation has happened since you've been there during the duration. We're talking with Walter Blanton, who is a visiting artist in residence at the University of Illinois School of Music in the Jazz Studies Division this week. Guest of Jim Pugh, who's also with us on the show. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. And before we continue the conversation, let's hear some music. You brought, I know, a number of CDs along. And what do you think would be a good start from
good
our conversation
what do you
so
think,
far?
Jim?
Well, something from 8, maybe from the suite.
I think that's a really
night.
Good idea.
Okay.
We actually have a couple of tracks from that might be.
That's the name of the album?
Yeah, we recorded it 10 years ago, wasn't
yeah.
it?
The suite's called 8. The yeah. movements are entitled 1, 2, 3, and so
really
on.
Original.
Four, five,
yeah,
six,
yeah,
seven, eight.
Yeah,
yeah,
okay. And who are the performers here?
Well, Jim and myself, and on piano is Bill Mays. Martin Wind was playing bass, and
Dennis McCrell.
Yeah, it's Dennis McCrell played drums.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, I couldn't remember his name.
Okay.
Some really stellar New York players.
So this wasn't this was a kind of a pickup band for the purpose of the
yeah.
recording?
Yeah.
Okay. So which number should we start with?
We'll start with number 6?
Yeah, number
okay.
6.
I think 6. It's
okay.
always been a favorite of mine.
Because of the catchy title,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So this is a composition of yours, Walt Blanton, I assume?
Yes. You'll feel its sixness.
All right. Well,
yeah.
let's find out. I'm really intrigued now. Music by Walter Blanton from his suite called 8, That was the oh-so-cleverly named movement called Six, which I presume preceded Seven and followed Five.
But there is a story behind this.
I figured there must be.
No, my wife and I were in London, and we came up out of the tube and into street level, and we were right across the street from, I can't think of the name of the most famous art museum in London. What is it called? I don't know.
But London Art Museum? I don't have any idea.
Yes, that was it. At any rate, and there was some amazing work in there, and like by Kandinsky, and he had painted this painting. There were, I think it was like 12 or maybe 14 small paintings, but all framed in one.
Okay.
One unit. And it's really, really incredible painting. It was very strong, very powerful. But there were these miniature pieces, but it's like the pieces themselves then sort of reacted with one another. You couldn't help but see it that way. Mm. And I couldn't figure out. I was in the midst of, I think I'd already written this composition, but I couldn't figure out what to call it. And all of a sudden I related to the Kandinsky painting, and I thought, well, that's it, 8. So like, I think his was called 14, something like that.
So it was just pieces that they hang together, but they're independent, and they interact with each other. And
they hang together because they were all written within a very short period of time.
Did you write them intending them to be together?
I don't think so. I don't remember that. I wasn't sure exactly what I wanted it to become and how it would react with itself, because that's basically what it was. The piece reacts to itself and the parts. And so, that's about it. It was because of that Kandinsky painting, I found some way to express the way I felt about these pieces anyway. I just didn't know what to call it.
And the reason we played that is that, in fact, there's going to be a performance of the complete suite tomorrow night.
Yeah.
7:30 Smith Recital Hall. Walter Blanton is my guest here on Live and Local, along with Jim Pugh of the University of Illinois Jazz Division. And who's doing the performance tomorrow? We should say also that Walt is in residence for the week at the university for a couple of reasons that Jim mentioned earlier. We'll recap those, particularly the final performance. But who's doing the performance tomorrow night?
Tomorrow night, let's see. Well, Walt and myself, trumpet and trombone. We were on the recording you just heard. And let me see, Chip Stevens will be playing piano. Larry Gray will be playing bass. And very talented student Matt Pliskota will be playing drums.
Yeah, I wondered if it was the faculty and guest or if it was one of the student ensembles. You'd said while we were listening to that, that's going to be quite a tricky rehearsal tonight.
Yeah.
Just tonight that you're rehearsing these pieces?
We have tonight to rehearse it because Walt just got in here yesterday. And everybody's had we've all had the music. And it's actually, Walt and I were sort of like commiserating with each other about, when we played this 10 years ago, it was easier. It's like we're 10 years older now.
It was easier 10 years
but
ago.
It's like, but it's been fun. So everybody's had the music and the recording to sort of reference. So it's... it's not that it's totally unfamiliar territory.
But trying to put it together is going to be a trick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Walt, you said earlier that back then, when you initially went to Las Vegas, you were playing lead trumpet, implying that that's changed. How much playing are you doing now, and how has your playing changed?
My playing, I don't know. It's gotten a little mellower. That's how my playing has changed. You're constantly evolving. In any art form, you're constantly evolving. And jazz musicians are always going through that process, don't you think, Jim? In some ways.
I hope so.
Yeah, because you don't want to stay the same. And jazz is such a spontaneous music that you really want to be able to express the way you feel about what you're doing, what you're playing, the sounds you're making. And you want to be able to express that in a way that's totally creative, well, that means it's going to be constantly changing.
the role of lead trumpet actually came up in a conversation on this show. I'm going to forget which program last week. I think it was on Thursday where we were talking with Tito Carrillo and a couple of his students in his band in the Latin Jazz Ensemble. We were talking, one of them was the lead trumpet, and what did it mean to be a lead trumpet and so on. And so when you said you were lead trumpet back then, when you play now, are you not taking the lead role, or is it simply that it's not in a big band and so that's not the appropriate term, or what?
Well, it's not lead role doesn't necessarily really describe it, because lead is actually a position within an orchestra, that may be a slang word. Principal in symphonic music would be the lead player, and in jazz and commercial music it would be the lead player would be, the lead trumpet would play the highest parts and be the leader of the brass section.
Right.
No offense, Jim. It's just the way it is.
None taken.
But what I was doing back in the 70s was mostly, to make a living, mostly playing lead trumpet. But I don't do that anymore. In fact, I don't play commercial music anymore. So, not that there's anything wrong with that. I just don't.
You just stick with jazz at this point?
Yeah.
You were, you said that when you got to Las Vegas, there was all kinds of work to be had, and now there's not so much work. Is that because of the changing nature of commercial music, changing nature of what kind of music shows up in the casinos or what?
Well, the reason that we had 16 full, size orchestras, in Las Vegas at the time was that was what the stars were being backed up by. I mean, that was the sound of the music. When you went to hear Tony Bennett, you expected to hear an orchestra with Tony Bennett or Frank Sinatra, Steve Lawrence and Edie Gourmet, all of these acts. That's what was required to play their backup music. And it was full orchestra. And and when you think of 16 hotels all playing at the same time, that's quite a lot of activity. And that's actually a lot of musicians being employed. And plus all of the lounges, which were 24 hours, and that was a whole different set of musicians. Although sometimes, I was on the Frontier Hotel band for, I think, 8 years, 8, 9 years, something like that. And its proximity to a couple of good lounges, sometimes I would start work at 8 o'clock at night, and I would finish at about 4 in the morning. Because I would take a lounge show,
I've always been amazed at how jazz players in particular can do that. Even in college, I never pulled on all-nighters or could never even stay up and think that far. And you have to not only be thinking, you have to be thinking fast to be a jazz player in the first place. And then to be doing it at that kind of the time of the morning, I guess just different personalities. So what has kept you in Las Vegas all this time?
Well, I got involved with a new music scene there. I mean, when my wife and I first went there, I just couldn't even imagine that there was a new music scene, meaning more of the avant-garde kind of music. I mean, you don't think about that when you think of Las Vegas. I didn't really imagine it, but I liked playing the music. And when I was in graduate school at Indiana University, can I say that?
Of course, no, that's perfectly fine.
Rival Big Ten, music programs.
Hey, Illinois is riding high after Saturday's defeat of Michigan.
yeah. But I was bitten by the new music bug there, because there was a lot of that going on. And I didn't expect to probably ever play that kind of music again. Music by Edgard Varèse and composers like that.
I was just going to ask if you meant newer jazz music, but you mean newer quote-unquote classical stuff.
Well, because of that new music scene, there was a little niche where we could play some more of the avant kind of jazz, which is what I ended up doing. Found other players that felt the same way about the music. And I mean, we would rehearse. Well, as a matter of fact, this kind of leads into some music I think that might not be a bad thing, because I brought some CD of a group that that I had in Las Vegas.
Okay.
And it kind of represented that. It was a group we called Dharma. And we would rehearse. We'd start about 3 o'clock in the morning and rehearse till about five. And we were seriously into it, you know.
Of course, then you sleep.
You know, after that. And
so, do you want to play a cut off of this one?
Well, it seemed kind of a natural move because
we
might as well just flow with it, huh?
What cut? Do you remember which one?
Pardon me.
What would you like to play off of here?
I think. This is there's a piece that's the opening piece on this CD, and the piece is called Blackwell Street Beat, and I was really into the music of Ornette Coleman at that time, a great alto saxophone player and composer, and his drummer for a lot of his bands was a drummer named Ed Blackwell, who was an incredible drummer, And so I came up with the title, Blackwell Street Beat. Well, most people think it's about a street in New Orleans called Blackwell Street, but that that was just a play on words. So this actually represents music that I was playing and writing in the 70s.
Okay. Do you want to mention the other performers?
Yeah, if I can remember who they are.
Good luck.
Well, yeah. No, it was in this kind of a band, you would not have a piano because a chordal instrument would fill it in a little bit too much. But it was myself and an alto saxophonist named Philip Wigfall and Tim Bonifant on bass clarinet and Kevin Thomas, a bass player who is now in New York, and Mike... partner in crime in this band was the drummer Roy James.
Okay, a tune called again.
Dharma.
Blackwell's.
Oh, you mean the piece?
Yeah.
Blackwell Street Beat.
On the album called Dharma, composition of Walter Blanton, who's my guest with Jim Pugh on Live and Local here on FM 90.9. There's a tune called Blackwell Street Beat by Walter Blanton, who's my guest on Live and Local today on FM 90.9. He's a trumpet player as well as composer and teaches currently at the College of Southern Nevada in Las Vegas. He's been in Las Vegas for many, many years, and he's in residence this week at the University of Illinois in the School of Music. Guest of Jim Pugh, who is with us today also. Jim is a faculty member in the Jazz Studies Division at the University of Illinois. He's been on this show a number of times, both playing live and in conversations like this one. And this is Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. We discovered, Walt, that you and I have something in common, as we were talking earlier, and that's that you used to be a radio guy.
Yeah. I mean, it was about a month ago.
Oh, really? So not so used to, huh?
Well, I wasn't even thinking about it, but I resigned, and it was right about the time that the radio station was going to totally more automated. I'm not exactly sure what the terminology is, but the most cutting edge way of presenting sound on the radio.
Okay. Well, a lot of it is automated.
The whole computerized.
That's the term, yeah.
Which is rather amazing. So I got out just in time.
The show is called Notes from the Underground.
Notes from the Underground.
On KUNV.
KUNV.
Yeah. And what was that about?
What was it like?
What was it about? Yeah, what was your show? What did your show cover?
Oh, the format?
Yeah.
It was avant-garde jazz.
Such as?
I mean, that's what most people called it.
Like what we just heard when you said
this would be on Notes from the Underground.
Okay, because when you introduced this and you were talking about avant-garde jazz and you mentioned Ornette Coleman, I expected rather different music than we just heard. I enjoyed it. Oh. I often don't enjoy a lot of avant-garde jazz myself.
Me either.
You know, particularly some of the, you know, the what I was called the screeching saxes, you know, here and there and everywhere else. And it's like,
that was kind of a 60s phenomenon. You know, they were trying to express these, you know, create new sounds.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it had its place. And I certainly listened to my share of it. But in terms of what I want to do, that's it's not that. It's more of a melodic approach.
Which you could hear in that, and I for one appreciate it. But that has gone on in quote unquote classical composition as well, where people are trying to create new sounds, and sometimes have left the idea of melody or completely recreated the idea of melody that doesn't often resonate with the average listener. You're here to do a number of events, and all of them potentially public, except for the one that's a trumpet hang, and that is only just other trumpet players.
You're fascinated by the trumpet hang.
I'm fascinated by the trumpet hang. I mean, that's on Wednesday at 2 o'clock. So tomorrow, there is a composition forum, and the reason I was bringing this up is that you're talking not only to the jazz composers, but also to the, again, quote-unquote classical composers in the other side of the school of music. And you're also here to, I don't know if you're going to be supervising this or not, but Jim Pugh is performing a piece of yours with Sinfonietta Camera this weekend,
mm-hmm.
which is really why you ended up coming here, as Jim outlined earlier. So when do you consider yourself a jazz composer, a classical composer, or just a composer?
Boy, that's a really great question.
Thank you very much. It was not premeditated.
I think I broaden it out a little bit, but there's a huge connection between everything that I do as a composer, whether it be jazz composer or non-jazz composer. See, there's not even a term for that. Non-something is not an actual term. I think that it's crossover music that I write, whether it's, this is a crossover piece, I think, for trombone and orchestra in a way, because Jim is going to be playing some marvelous improvisations in this piece. So it's not like a classical trombone concerto. It's not a concerto at all, actually. And
what is it?
And there are elements of jazz and pop, and some Latin influence, Latin American musical influence in the piece. So it's quite a mix of things without becoming jumbled. It just kind of floats on.
What's the name of the composition?
Sonnet Voyage.
Sonnet Voyage?
Jim and I call it Sonnet Voyage.
Now that has to have a story behind it, the title.
Well, it was just a way of saying not being quite so boring by saying sound voyage. So, sonnet. I think sonnet just means sound, doesn't it?
If you say so.
I'm looking at Jim right now, and he's looking at me, and neither one of us can answer this question.
I just think when I hear sonnet, I think John Donne or Shakespeare, you know, sort of poetry.
Oh, I think sonnet.
That's
sonnet. Like, how is it spelled?
S-O-N-A-N-T.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well,
S-O-N-A-N-T.
Well, I don't know what that means.
Sonnet. I ran into that term someplace, and it stuck in my head, but I can't remember where it popped in.
That's going to be Saturday night at the Kranert Center for the Performing Arts, Sinfonietta Camera, Ian Hobson conducting that, and Jim Pugh is the soloist. And, so this trumpet hang, I'm really stuck on this thing. That's Wednesday.
We keep going back to that,
Wednesday
don't we?
At 2 o'clock, yeah. And it is a free event, and that we're assured that other trumpet players are welcome, but Jim will be there as a trombonist as well.
Mm-hmm. I'm allowed to sneak in.
Allowed to sneak in.
Of all the events, that's what we don't know for sure where that one's going to take place.
Oh, that's the big secret.
How many people show up? It might be in Ronnie Rahm's studio.
Okay, so this one.
Building.
Yeah, you have
that's
to be
sort
in the
of an
know.
In-house, yeah.
Okay, you'd have to be in the know. But this composition forum, which is tomorrow, what are you going to say to these people? What do you say to composers if you're doing a forum?
You know, that's a good question because I don't have a clue. I try to come in and be ready for things. I'm going to be asked questions that I may have to pause and imagine how I could come up with an answer of something that I'm not sure whether I'm actually answering the question or not. But that's the whole idea of composition, is that question and answer. When you're composing, you're constantly asking yourself questions and trying to find some kinds of answers. So I guess my approach to it is going to be as if I'm treating it as a composition.
The conversation as a composition.
Yeah.
And is there any assumption, do you know, that the people who show up will have heard some of your music? Or maybe yes, maybe not?
Well, I can't imagine that too many people would have heard any of my music, actually.
I don't know that they will for the composition form. I know because Walt's speaking to my jazz composition class today and on Wednesday. And last week I sort of pre-acquainted them with mm-hmm. with his music. You know, we spent last week like going over and talking about, well, at least my views of how he chooses to compose, that kind of stuff. I mean, just, which are probably totally wrong, totally not what he thinks about them at all. But it was a matter. So I didn't want my students to be like totally unfamiliar with his music when we jump into it. But hopefully by the end of the week that will have changed between the two performances and his.
Well, I brought some scores, and I actually did something that was a first time thing. There's a piece of music that I wrote, I think it's about almost 15 years ago, and I had it recorded. The label that it was on had all of their orchestral stuff recorded in Kiev, Ukraine. And so actually I got to go there and witness the recording session, which was a rather amazing thing. And so this piece of music was recorded there, and it's based on a series of paintings that a very close friend of mine, who's a painter, an artist, created paintings of. Remember I can't remember who actually filmed it. The United States Army, when they were doing atomic testing in the Nevada desert. And one of the things that when I was a kid, when I was just like an elementary school kid, you saw this on our black and white TVs of this house being destroyed by an atomic blast. And so when you went to school and you had your duck and cover exercises, you knew that you weren't going to make it anyway because you saw these buildings being just annihilated into fragments. And he did a painting, a series of paintings. They're very famous. They've been all over the world. And I wrote this piece of music in his studio as he was working. It took about 6 months. And then it's for orchestra. Symphony orchestra.
That's not your normal mode of composition, though, I'm guessing.
No. But so what I did with one of my colleagues at College of Southern Nevada, he's in the art department, and we put together a film. The artist gave me a set of slides of this house being, blown away, and so we created a piece with the paintings in it and the music. So we actually created a film on it.
And what's the title of that?
The Body of a House was the name of the series of paintings. So I'm going to use that as a demonstration point of how I approached, at least in that piece, how I approached the compositional process. And I think that that's what I really need to do, and that's what I know that that's what the composers out there are going to ask me. I'm going to get some pretty serious, hard questions about the compositional process.
Right.
And I'm the one that's going to win because I'm going to be a better composer when we finish this thing. Right now, I'm biting my nails, but you know,
when you get into it, it'll be just fine. Well, because everybody has their own process.
That's right.
And so you just talk about yours. We're talking with Walter Blanton and Jim Pugh here on Live and Local on FM 90.9, and I see that we don't have many minutes left. So why don't we reserve most of what we have left to first of all mention again some of the events, which are this composition forum tomorrow
3 o'clock to 4:20 in the music building, which is it's going to be in room 1201, which is down in the basement. It's ostensibly called the Fishbowl.
Okay. And that's on Oregon Street on the U of I campus in Urbana. And that's open to?
That's open to that's free to
whoever
the public.
Wants to come. And then the first concert, the recital tomorrow night with Walt Blanton performing and Jim Pugh and a combo of some really fine players is tomorrow night at 7:30 in the recital hall of Smith Memorial Hall. And that'll be a performance of Walt Blanton's piece 8, which we sampled earlier, and some pieces of composers who influenced you in your own work.
Well, we haven't totally made up our minds yet on what we're going to play in the second half, but there are composers that their work really resonates in 8. You know, you can hear it. Well, maybe not. I can hear it. And it's Duke Ellington and Thelonious Monk. So we'll probably focus on music of Duke Ellington and Thelonious Monk on the second half of the concert.
Okay, so that's tomorrow night, 7:30. And then the Jazz Forum also is, that's a regular class, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's a lot of times a performance class. When people are coming through town, they'll be clinicking or whatever. But it's like the composition forum, and it's a chance for the entire jazz department to sort of meet once a week.
And in general, I think people are welcome to show up for that.
Yeah, this Friday's at noon in Smith Room 25 in the basement
in the lower
of Smith
level.
Memorial
mm-hmm.
Hall. And that's open to the public every week.
And then finally, Jim Pugh's performance with Sinfonia da Camera Saturday night at 7:30 at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, playing Walt Blanton's piece called Sonnet. What was it?
Voyage.
Sonnet Voyage. Let's go out with one of the other recordings that you brought along and maybe give us a quick introduction to that, and we'll say goodbye.
Well, my colleague is my A&R man. And,
The other piece from 8?
Yeah, I think another piece from 8.
Okay, what was the other one? I think, was it 4, I think?
Yes, 4.
Okay.
4 is, for those of you who come to the concert and you hear the whole thing, I have picked a favorite, personal favorite, and that's 4.
And we're going to hear that now.
Yeah.
Walter Blanton and Jim Pugh, thank you very much for joining me on Live and Local.
Thank you, Kevin.
And this is their performance of Walt Blanton's piece, along with other combo members. The suite is called 8, his favorite movement called 4. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9.